You're listening to West Southwest on WMUK. I'm Earlene McMichael. Coming up, I talk with Kalamazoo Institute of Arts Executive Director Belinda Tate. Today is her second year anniversary at the KIA. This interview is a half-hour version of one presented last month. Tate shares how she got interested in the arts and formed her signature style of community collaboration and non-traditional programming. She was previously director of the Winston-Salem, North Carolina Diggs Gallery, one of the nation's premier African-American art galleries. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. It's a wonderful city in central North Carolina, and I had a lovely childhood there.
What did you dream of being as a child?
Really, as a child, I dreamed of traveling. I loved reading. I loved reading about different places around the world. And as a child, I really just wanted to travel. And at the time, that seemed to be an impossible dream because I was from pretty humble circumstances. So I didn't really know how I was going to make that dream come true, but I simply prayed on it and I held fast to that dream. And to date, I have been to 17 different countries.
Did you have a lot of exposure to art as a youth?
I did not, actually. There was a community center near my house that was operated by the city. And in that community center, there was a wonderful woman named Jean Parks. And she hosted little arts and crafts classes. So I did a little hand building with ceramics. I learned how to macrame there. I did some painting and drawing, nothing close to the level of instruction that we offer at the Kalamazoo Institute of Arts. But it was important to me. It was an important outlet for me. I am from a family of makers. My grandmother was a quilter. She taught all of her daughters to sew. She taught me to sew. One of my aunts did a lot of crochet work. So as a child, when I was in the second grade, I learned to knit and crochet and embroider.
Would you call yourself an artist or just kind of more a connoisseur of arts?
I am
a lover of
an
arts.
Appreciator and a lover of the arts. I am not an artist by any stretch of the imagination.
When was the moment that you can recall that you said, I'm going to have a career in the arts?
I never expected to have a career in the arts. While I was an undergraduate at Yale, I was a math major, applied math with a concentration in operations research. And as a sophomore, I began working at the Yale Center for British Art in the finance department. And I've always been a precocious person. I've always asked a lot of questions, and I would ask a question and then that would lead to an assignment somewhere in the building. So I had a wonderful experience there, and I really got to know many different parts of that institution. But still, while I worked there, I didn't have an intention to become a museum administrator. But the director there saw something in me, Duncan Robinson, and he simply felt that this was a career that I needed to pursue. And we had many heart-to-heart conversations about this in his office. And he made me promise that I would take an art history class. And I took an art history class, and I loved it. It was an African art history class by the great Sylvia Arden Boone, who was a tremendous, tremendous scholar. She and I became very good friends, and she was a role model for me. Duncan was a role model for me, and he also introduced me to at the time, Mimi Neal. She was the director of the Yale Art Gallery. She's currently Mimi Gates. Mimi became my advisor And towards the end of my junior year, I was convinced. I simply loved the people who were around me. I loved the people in the museum. And both of those institutions at Yale opened me up to a world that I had never been exposed to, and those institutions allowed me to self-actualize in ways that I had never anticipated, because I could now contemplate ideas that could only be expressed visually. At the end of my junior year in college, I was a math major. At the beginning of my senior year in college, I was an art history major.
How did you decide that you wanted to go to the very highest levels of overseeing an institution? You were the director of the Diggs Gallery at Winston-Salem State University.
From a very early age, I think I have always been attracted to profound beauty. And that is where my love of travel came into play. I wanted to travel the world because I wanted to see the most beautiful things on earth, whether made by nature or humanity. That love of beauty is what attracted me to the museum, and that is what gave me the purpose of wanting to share that beauty with others. Within our society overall, we live with different levels of feelings of safety and different levels of access to things that are just beautiful. And for me, there is something that is uplifting and inspiring and gracious about beauty. And it makes me want to share. So I've always been attracted to museums, places where I can find some of the greatest examples of beauty. And I love large encyclopedic museums that really house examples of the best of humanity from around the world and throughout the ages. So I think that is how I chose my career path.
You were at the Diggs Gallery for 15 years as the director. During that time, you had a lot of accomplishments, and I'd like to talk a little bit about that. You increased the permanent collection by 20%. You increased student participation there during your tenure. One of the things that you seem to like to do and you did there is try to bring in different demographics that aren't used to going to the museum.
Well, the academic setting was great for me because I love to share ideas and I love to see other people sharing ideas. I love to listen to people and I love hearing about people's life experiences and perspectives. And through my work at Diggs, I really began to truly understand on a very deep level how art can be both connective and healing. I witnessed people working through major life issues while examining and unpacking a work of art. I saw how art could bring together people from disparate backgrounds and from different political perspectives, different modes of thought in general. So at Diggs, I really worked to position that institution as the hub of a kind of creative center. And I really wanted people in that community to feel that they always had a place to go to take a break from the challenges of everyday life, from the hustle and bustle and busyness of everyday life. And so my work there really became centered around that type of practice, understanding that a collection within itself has a heart and soul. And how can we make these works of art come alive for the people who are here to enjoy them?
You would break with convention. Like, it was a performance you brought in about the Underground Railroad.
Oh, yes. Well, I broke with convention so often, and I don't even realize that I'm breaking with convention. You know, there's a part of this that comes very intuitive to me in terms of figuring out the needs of the community and the audiences that we serve. However, with that particular project, I wanted to be very deliberate. I had the benefit of a stellar education. Even in the public school system in Winston-Salem, I felt that there were teachers around me who protected and nurtured me and who really affirmed me and helped me along. And I realized that everybody within that environment did not receive the same benefit. So with that particular project, I specifically wanted to give a gift to the students and not the particular teachers, but in honor of the teachers there who had supported me. And so this Underground Railroad opera seemed to be the perfect way to do that. And we hired a professional opera singer, and I asked Dr. Maya Angelou, who is also someone that I respect highly. I explained to her why I wanted to do this project and why I felt this was an important gift to the community and particularly an important gift to the public school system there. And she agreed to help me, and she came and she narrated that Underground Railroad children's opera free of charge.
And the kids were in the production.
And the kids were in the production. They performed with a professional opera singer, and they performed for other kids in the school system and the community.
This is West Southwest, and we're chatting with Belinda Tate, Executive Director of the Kalamazoo Institute of Arts. You were hired in July of 2014. You were actually recruited for this job.
Yes.
Is that correct? What made you consider coming here?
The board of directors at the Kalamazoo Institute of Arts is a great group of people. And I was really inspired by this board. I was very open with the board about the way that I operate, that I do break from convention. I have a museum practice that is really centered around bringing people together. And sometimes that inspires me to be innovative and creative in ways that are not typical for an art museum. And, you know, to a certain extent, I don't have a better word than just to say I'm very grassroots oriented. And I am focused on creating a place for everyone, people from all walks of life. Should be able to come in and enjoy the best of art. And I was very open about that. And they said, that's fantastic. That's what we want here in Kalamazoo.
When you first started, you wanted to make the KIA more of a community resource. Can you give me some examples of how you have tried to make the KIA more of a community space?
On February 20th of this year, the community of Kalamazoo experienced a very tragic shooting. It impacted me very deeply, and it impacted this entire community. It really shook us to our core. And we as a team decided that we were going to open up all of our programs for 1 week to the entire community for free, to extend the warmth, the peace, the solace, and the beauty of the museum to everyone, and that we were going to encourage our community to use this opportunity as a time to refocus on those things that are most important in life and to focus on our family and our friends and to come into the museum with the people that we care the most about. And that is what happened. And over a very brief period, maybe 5 days or so, over 700 people came into the KIA. That is part of our service to the community. And that extended to the Kirk Newman Arts School. The following week, the school hosted its biannual hands-on project where people can come in and they can experiment with different media. And it's a make and take evening. And normally, some of the activities have a very modest cost, you know, $2, $5, et cetera. But in this case, the school wanted to also provide some free activities to make sure that everyone could use this moment of making as a way to reconnect with self and as a way to express what they were feeling emotionally.
There was also another event I'm thinking of where I want to say that you brought in poetry.
One of the things that we've done at the KIA is we've really freed ourselves to be interdisciplinary. And we understand that people can connect with the visual arts on multiple ways through multiple channels. And music and poetry are different channels of connecting with the visual arts. Theater is another channel. So we've used all of those things to connect community members with the arts. We did a wonderful program that was spearheaded by Denise Miller and Michelle Johnson, and I apologize, there were some other poets involved in that activity, but they wrote poetry that was inspired by works of art on view in an exhibition that we hosted called Common Ground. And that exhibition featured works by African-American artists from the collections of the KIA, the Muskegon Museum of Art, and the Flint Institute of Art. The power of their words were unbelievable. Michelle Johnson, you know, who has this incredible knowledge of music, curated this playlist that accompanied the performance that was just outstanding and unreal. And then they also projected images of the artwork on a screen. So the audience experienced this multi-sensory, you know, event, and it was just transformative.
When you first came on board, you talked about bringing in the voices of youth.
Part of the strategy to attract them is to diversify our educational platform so that we are offering programs and exhibitions that will appeal to that segment of our population. Last Friday night for Art Hop, we had Pokemon in the galleries. And nearly 400 people showed up at the KIA.
And when you say Pokemon, were there pictures of them?
It was Pokemon Go. People came with their cell phones and they played Pokemon Go. Also added some art making project. And then we had a little scavenger hunt and you could walk through the galleries and find pictures that represented places where different Pokemon monsters might live.
You're looking to have a curator of family programs. What's the status of that?
We have hired Candy Waterloo. She is the curator of youth and family programs at the KIA. And her job is to design experiences that, in particular, meet the needs of youth and their families.
You want to have a baccalaureate residency program. What is that, and when do you hope to start if you haven't already?
Last year was our pilot year, and we had 5 wonderful young ladies participate in that program. I spent 15 years on a college campus, and I watched many of our very, very bright art majors graduate without a clear opportunity lined up for themselves. So I recognized that these young, talented artists needed a place to go to continue to hone their skills and to develop ideas that could yield a portfolio that would prepare them for an MFA program, or they needed a place to develop not only their artistic skills, but their business management skills so that they could become practicing studio artists.
What haven't we talked about that you would like to talk about?
We have a magnificent staff and faculty. The people there really inspire me because they are incredibly committed to the arts and this community, and they will do almost anything to make this institution and this community successful.
This would be a good time for those people who have never been to the KIA, and even those who have, to have a full appreciation of what's offered there within its walls. My understanding is you have 4,600 pieces of art.
On the upper level, we have 4 galleries where we primarily host temporary exhibitions. 2 of those exhibitions currently are or have received national attention. It's an incredible season at the KIA right now. It's not the time to miss what's going on there. On the lower level, we exhibit more of our permanent collection. It's an incredible American art collection that includes works from the 19th century to the present. We also have the Joy Light Asian Art Gallery on the lower level, and we do both temporary exhibitions and exhibitions from our permanent collection in that space. And then on the lower level, we have the Ethel Ditton Gross Gallery, where we curate temporary exhibitions from our permanent collection and from works of art that we borrow from other artists or institutions. So there's a lot that we offer within the exhibition spaces. We also have the Kirk Newman Art School, which is an incredible resource. The art school has nearly 2,800 students. They are providing instruction in a variety of media, ceramics, jewelry, sculpture, weaving, painting and drawing, glass fusing, and much more, and photography and printmaking and so many other things. That resource within this community is quite rare. Very few communities have a community-based art school operating at the caliber of our Kirk Newman Art School.
You mentioned that you have 2 exhibitions that have gotten national attention.
I should have said 3 of the 4 temporary exhibitions that are on view have received national attention, 2 on the upper level and 1 on the lower level. So the 3 are Barbara Takanaga, Waiting in the Sky 2. It's a wonderful opportunity to see fantastic abstract paintings that will take your train of thought from the microscopic to the cosmic. Renee Stout, Tales of a Conjure Woman. Renee is an African-American woman based in the D.C. area, and her work is really centered around African spiritual traditions and the unique wisdom and beauty those traditions bring to the world. Chil Hoonan is an artist from Korea who is based in the Maryland region, and he does these wonderful light boxes that incorporate mirrors that provide the illusion that you're looking into infinity. They are mesmerizing works of art that, you know, people would not want to miss. And then I will mention Fred Wessel, the Fred Wessel exhibition that's also on view. And Fred is one of the nation's leading artists working with the egg tempera medium. It's an incredibly difficult medium to work with, and he is a true master. So that exhibition is not to be missed as well.
What's coming up?
I would prefer that people go to our website and take a look at the many things that we have to offer. We have regular programs on Tuesdays at noon. We have a series called Art Break that's incredibly popular. About 100 folk come out every Tuesday at noon.
Are those free?
And those are free. We have a Thursday evening program. So the second, third, and fourth Thursday of the month, we're always hosting a program at the KIA. One thing that is coming up that is very special is a community-based collaboration. We partnered with the Merz Tate Travel Club to do a girls' empowerment event through the arts. And we have many partners in that collaboration. So in addition to the Merz Tate Travel Club, the Girl Scouts, Girls on the Run, the YWCA Tech Girls, the BACC, the Douglas Center, FIRE, Junior Girls, and I'm sure I'm missing someone and I apologize right now. But all of these organizations are coming together on Art Hop Night. This is free of charge. We will have art-based activities for girls throughout the community to engage in, and it's an opportunity for girls who are not affiliated with a particular program to get to know that program and what it offers and some of the girls who are currently engaged in that program. And I didn't mention the KIA's own Art Girls, which is a wonderful group of girls who will be represented there.
So what is Art Girls?
Art Girls is a community-based arts initiative. We mentor and work with a group of girls in the community, and over the years we've chosen various sites that have included the Boys and Girls Club, the Douglas Center, and the like. And they simply do projects that are based in the visual arts and literary traditions over the course of the summer.
It's worth mentioning that now the KIA is open at every Art
we
Hop.
We love Art Hop.
And finally, you have extended hours.
We do have extended hours. On Thursday and Friday evenings, we are open until 8 p.m. So this gives people an opportunity to come to the KIA after work. We're also open on the weekends. We're open from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Saturdays and noon to 5 p.m. on Sundays. One of the great Saturday morning programs that we offer is a program called Art Detectives, and it is also free of charge, and it's a unique experience for early elementary aged kids and their families, where you will come and the library at the KIA organizes a book that will be read to the kids by Artie the Mouse. And kids love Artie the Mouse. And after that experience, they will have an activity that is in the galleries, and that activity is designed to not only get kids looking at art, but to get parents and kids talking, communicating with each other about what they're seeing in our gallery spaces. And then there's a follow-up hands-on art-making activity in the school for the kids. So it's a wonderful Saturday morning program.
Belinda Tate, thank you for joining us at WMUK.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure to be here, and it's my honor to serve this community.
We've been talking with Kalamazoo Institute of Arts Executive Director Belinda Tate. The KIA's Girls Art Night takes place at the Friday, September 9th Art Hop. For more info, visit our website at wmuk.org. For West Southwest on WMUK, I'm Earlene McMichael.